Hank, if you want to pick up your story where you felt eyes were watching you.
Well, on this occasion, I was working with this Dasnich tribal man. And as I said, this guy was a shaman. And so I stood up, and I had this very strong feeling of being watched by something. And I kind of slid my eyes underneath the brim of my hat around to my right. I didn't see anything. And I slid them towards my left. And then just for a moment, with my peripheral vision, I saw something. It was big, and it had spots, and it was about 6 feet off the ground. And when I looked directly at it, it just disappeared. It was though something stepped through a rip in the fabric of the air and then zipped it closed, leaving this momentary wrinkle that straightened out and then was gone. So I'm looking at this, and I'm thinking, wow, you know, maybe it's time to go back to Nairobi and have a hamburger. But then I looked at this shaman, and this shaman was watching me. And suddenly I understood that he had seen it too. And he knew that I'd seen it, and I knew that he knew that I'd seen it. You know, it was one of those things. So I looked at him, and I said, Atuko, that was his name, Atuko, Kwanini, what was that? I was using Swahili. And he gave me this long, measuring look, and then he pointed directly at it where it had been, and he said a single word in Swahili, Shaitani. Shaitani is the Swahili word for spirit.
Interesting.
But unfortunately, my Swahili was really minimalist, and so we never really got very much beyond that in terms of explaining what it might have been. But, you know, once you've had the direct experience yourself, things tend to shift. They tend to change. And, in fact, experiences like this began to change me. But, you know, I wasn't ready yet. This is back in the early 70s, and I resisted. I resisted going in that direction, and so I kind of closed up my field notebooks with my cryptic notes to myself and went on with my life. But then, you know, in Berkeley in the early 80s, I ended up in a workshop with the famous Michael Harner. And, yeah, I attended it largely because I was an anthropologist, and I thought, well, you know, I might have to say something about shamans and the New Age movement in a lecture someday to my students. So I ended up taking this workshop with some misgivings, and I ended up being paired with this young woman named Sandra Ingerman, all right? And she was at that time a student over at the CIIS in San Francisco, where she was getting her degree in counseling psychology. I was finishing up my PhD in anthropology, and we did a shamanic exercise in this workshop. And at that time, you know, I didn't believe any of this stuff. You know, I was just vaguely interested. And the exercise involved working as a team in a pair where one member of the team would go into the spirit world, into the world of things hidden, and find a helping spirit to come and be in relationship, in this case with me. So here I am lying on the floor of this gymnasium in the dark next to this beautiful woman, and Michael Harner's blamming away on his drum, and I'm lying there wondering what I'm doing there. And this woman goes into deep trance, and about, oh, maybe 10 minutes later, she leans over, cups her hands, and blows into my heart. And I felt this incredible surge of warmth, and it was as though something dimly remembered had come back to me. It's like your advertisement in psychometry, you know, it was very much like this. You know, something came, and I wasn't sure what it was. And then at the end of the exercise, we set up, and Sandy turned to me, and she said, well, you know, I was guided to a place where I had never been before, and I discovered this tall, spotted being that looked like a leopard. And as she was listening, as she was describing this being, all of my hackles started to stand up. Because what she was doing is she was describing my childhood imaginary friend who I used to have imaginary adventures with in Central Park in New York.
How could she do this?
That's a good question, George. You know, these are the kinds of experiences that impress the scientist, because there's no way she could have known about my childhood imaginary friend. In fact, you know, I was then in my early 30s, and I hadn't thought about this stuff in, you know, like 20 years, you know, since I was a kid. So, you know, this was a beginning. This was a beginning for me. So I took several workshops, and about a year later, I began to have these spontaneous visions that are described in my first book, Spirit Walker. And in the very first vision, I underwent what was called, what we could call a classic shamanic initiation. Now, I didn't know it was a shamanic initiation, but I was lying in bed next to my wife, who was pregnant with our first child. She was reading a book. It was like 4 o'clock in the morning, and she couldn't sleep because all her ligaments were loosening up in preparation for birth giving. And so I sat up, and I tried to make things better by massaging her. But, you know, inevitably, the magic that touch creates progressed into a joyous marital encounter. And we made love. And on the heels of this marital encounter, I was just absolutely blissed out. I was preparing to go back to sleep. And suddenly my physical body was invaded by these feelings of power or force, which have been could have been very disturbing if the feelings hadn't been, you know, quite so incredibly fabulous. The feeling was very much like, imagine yourself on a swing with very long ropes. Unless you have children, you probably haven't done it in a long time. But as you swing down and up in this heady arc on the swing, your body fills with this rush of sensation again. And again,
and again,
when you're swinging. This is what it was like. And in my case, this rush of sensation came in, and I suddenly discovered that my physical body was completely paralyzed, and I couldn't move. I was absolutely as rigid as a stick. Well, I remember looking up at the ceiling and blinking, and then it's kind of like I blacked out, if I could put it this way. Everything went dark, and when my visuals came up again, I was standing in this dark forest. All around me, I could see these trees in the darkness. It was like black on black. And, you know, these sensations were just unbelievable. I was just soaring on these sensations while I'm looking at these trees. And suddenly I heard Jill turn the page of her book. So although my physical body was lying in bed next to her in this deeply entranced state, I could still sort of perceive in both worlds at the same time, if you get it.
You were in altered states, yet there was nothing that really contributed to getting you there, other than meditation.
You know? Yeah, there was, because the three great gateways into transcendent experience are meditation, and the shamanic method is a form of meditation, tantra, i.e. lovemaking, and trauma. Many people who've had a terribly traumatic experience have been precipitated into visionary states of consciousness, and they emerge with these incredible stories. So here I was in this visionary state of consciousness in the world of things hidden. Now, what I didn't know really clearly at that time, which I know now, and of course, Sandy and I, in writing this book, have gone to great pains to try to explain exactly what these experiences are, where they're happening, where they're coming from. You know, I mean, she's very highly educated in psychology. I'm an anthropologist. Everybody else in the group is highly educated as well, psychologists, historians, anthropologists. So this isn't kind of like a softcore book. It's more like a hardcore book. And so here I am in what the shaman would call the world of things hidden. Shamans tend to perceive the world as made up of two distinct halves. There's a world of things seen and a world of things hidden. And they draw no distinction between them. The shaman understands that they present themselves together, mixed into one common reality. But the shaman is a gifted individual who discovers, usually early in life, that they have the ability to trance very easily. And in this expanded state, in this altered state, if you will, they are able to perceive, they're able to go into the world of things hidden. And one of the first things they discover is that this world is inhabited. It's inhabited by those transpersonal forces that the traditional people call spirits. We might call them transformative forces or transpersonal forces.
What do we call them? What do we call them? Ghosts?
Ghosts. The spirits of the dead are found there. This is where the gods live. This is where the spirits live. This is where the ancestors live. And the shaman is a gifted individual who, through coming into relationship with these transpersonal forces, is able to do various things, initially on behalf of themselves and then increasingly on behalf of other people.